You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This day every year is like action-packed, for me anyway. I get my list of things that I have to do. I started on that list yesterday. I had to pick up the turkeys. We're doing Thanksgiving. We do Thanksgiving every year. We usually have a crowd ranging from anywhere from 18, which is small, which is what we have coming tomorrow. We've had 40-plus before in our home. But Thanksgiving is the holiday that we do. And this Wednesday, for everybody, it's the biggest travel day of the year, is action-packed. I'll be in a liquor store today. I'll be at Whole Foods at some point today. And I'm sure I'll be told late this afternoon, wait a minute, you got to run to Safeway real quickly to pick something up. Usually when you get to late Wednesday, it is a repeat. Yeah, I got that thing yesterday. I got that thing earlier today, whatever it is. I used to love Wednesdays before Thanksgiving because as a younger person, and many of you know this, Wednesday was a party day. Now, I'm going to participate in some of that too, in and around some of the things I will be out doing after I do this radio show and my podcast today. I will probably be stopping by to meet some friends for a few cold pops at some point during the day. That'll be fun as well. Good morning. By the way, tomorrow is very peaceful. Not in every home, understood. But tomorrow is so much more peaceful. It's my favorite holiday of the year. I enjoy it more than Christmas or any other holiday. Christmas is a bit too hectic. I like the build-up to Christmas, but then it's just too much gift giving and receiving. Good morning on this day before Thanksgiving 2022. We've got a football team in town right now that is one of the hottest teams in the NFL. And there's an indication out there that the boys in the desert have a ton of respect for what Washington is doing right now. I'm going to share that piece of information and that indication with you coming up in about 10 to 15 minutes. Two guests on the show today, Michael Phillips, Richmond Times-Dispatch at 7, and Charch will join us a day early this week at 8:40. I am in Paul Charchian's Guillotine League, which is, he's got several big-time leagues as a prominent national fantasy guru. And I was eliminated last Sunday. A guillotine league is where you play against the rest of the field, and the worst scoring team of the week gets eliminated. I made it all the way to just before Thanksgiving, but courtesy of Kirk Cousins' terrible day against the Cowboys, I was eliminated by just a few points. It didn't help in a couple of other spots either. I could have started Aaron Rodgers. Rodgers had a much bigger point total day in the Thursday night game against Tennessee, but I chose not to do that. That was a mistake. What's funny is I just added Kirk Cousins to my fantasy team about 2 weeks ago, and I had only started him once. So it wasn't like I drafted Cousins because I'm so into Cousins. He was just available, and the quarterback that I started the year with, Russell Wilson, was just pretty bad all year long. We've got an NFL buy and sell on the show today. We've got NFL power rankings. We're going to get to the college football playoff rankings. And I have Thanksgiving Day smell test picks, plural. A 6-3-1 weekend this past weekend. It's now 7 winning weeks out of the last 9. And one of those two that didn't produce more wins than losses was just a 500 week. The problem is I'm, you know, just a few games. I think I'm 4 or 5 games over 500 for the season. That one losing week was a bad losing week. It was like 3-10. But I've had a, you know, a 9-4, a couple of 6-3s, a 6-3-1, a 5-4, a 5-4, a 5-3-1. You know, a bunch of those. Winning weeks, though. 6-3-1, when you are plus 3 units on the weekend, if you just played my selections, you were a winner this weekend again. So we'll get the week hopefully off to a good start with a couple of Thanksgiving Day selections later on in the show. But I want to start with a what do you got?
All right, all right, all right.
What do you got?
240. Where's number 11? Griffin keeps it. He's got him. Downfield. Robinson for the touchdown. No flags.
You know, 10 years ago yesterday, and really we're sharing this with you on the day before Thanksgiving, because 10 years ago on Thanksgiving Day, November 23rd, 2012, it was, or no, I'm sorry, November 22nd, today's November 23rd, November 22nd, 2012, in Dallas. Boy, that's, you know, in Dallas on November 22nd. They played in Dallas a lot on Thanksgiving on November 22nd. November 22nd being a significant day, of course, for many of you who understand the significance of that date, November 22nd, 1963, in Dallas. But 10 years ago, that was about as excited as I have ever been watching my team play on Thanksgiving after all of those years of not being able to beat the Cowboys and all of those opportunities over the years on Thanksgiving to finally beat them on Thanksgiving Day. And we did not know at the time what was in store for the remainder of the season. What's interesting about Washington's 38-31 win over the Cowboys, led by RG3, and that first touchdown pass was a 68-yarder to Aldrick Robinson for a 7-3 lead early in the second quarter. It would be an onslaught in the second quarter. You'll hear a couple of the other touchdown passes from RG3 in that second quarter coming up here in a moment. But what was interesting about that particular stretch of season is we had had the exciting start to the season of 2012 with RG3 debuting in that shock and awe opener in the New Orleans Superdome. And then they fell on a couple of difficult losses. They had a chance to beat the Rams on the road. They were, you know, in it with Cincinnati. That was a weird game at home, the home opener against the Bengals. They were running triple option stuff. Then they beat Tampa on an RG3 late drive. He got hurt against Atlanta, but then came back the following week with the Minnesota game, which included the electrifying 76-yard touchdown run. He threw the touchdown pass to Santana Moss that gave him the lead against New York, but then they gave it up and lost 27-23. And then they had two very disappointing lopsided losses against Pittsburgh and Carolina on homecoming day. One of my favorite all time, and we did this a couple of weeks ago when D'Angelo Williams wasn't very happy that the Panthers were the homecoming opponent for the Redskins. But that was before the bye week, and they were 3-6. And Mike Shanahan made the comment that was misconstrued, in my opinion, which is we are going to start looking at other players to see what we have, essentially implying at 3-6. This season was over, and he was looking towards 2013. Well, they had only played 9 games. They had 7 left. And what he did say, also as a follow-up a little bit later on in the week, or during that bye week, look, we're just looking to play the best players that give us a chance to make a run. And they came out of the bye week, and they destroyed Philadelphia 31-6. And there was no buzz off of that game. That just made them 4-6. But the game that really got it started was this Thanksgiving Day game against the Cowboys, where the Cowboys were 5-5, Washington was 4-6. And I will tell you, because I remember doing this, I was giving out my playoff scenarios before that Thanksgiving Day game. I said, if somehow they can get this one, They got a chance with a couple of home games coming up to get back into this race, get back into the NFC East race, which was all bottled up at the time with the Giants and the Cowboys in Washington, and get back into the wild card race. And that first touchdown pass was just a harbinger of things to come. Two drives later with a 14-3 lead, this was Griffin on an incredible catch and run by Pierre Garçon.
Draft. Play action. Griffin over the middle. He's got Garçon. And Pierre Garçon has got room to go. Garçon, touchdown. No flags.
21-3 in that moment. And all of a sudden, you were like, I can remember my house. We were hosting Thanksgiving, but dinner start time was going to be after the game. I told my wife to plan for right around 7:45, and everybody was on board with that. Late Thanksgiving dinner, but they were playing the Cowboys, and it was 21-3. And then right before the end of the first half, I think this is one of the best throws RG3's ever made. He's a rookie, and he's having a sensational year at that point. And he is a dual-threat quarterback, and we know how that went when we got towards the end of the year. But this was right before the half. Washington's up 21-3, and there are about, I think there was somewhere in the neighborhood of like 10 seconds, 11 seconds, and they had a couple of shots at the end zone, and this is what happened.
First down and goal, a shot into the end zone. The pass is caught. Touchdown, Santana Moss.
Listen to the Washington fans on Thanksgiving in Jerry World for that game. That was the perfect back shoulder throw in a tight window on a condensed field when they had the ball at the Cowboy 6-yard line. It was 28-3. It felt like the route was on. The Cowboys would make a run in the second half. They would get it to 7, but Washington went on a long drive and kicked a field goal with about 2:58 left. Kai Forbath from 48 yards out to make it 38-28, and they won the game 38-31 to snap that long streak of not beating the Cowboys on Thanksgiving Day. Now, Washington had won a Thanksgiving Day game. They had won only one Thanksgiving Day game, and that was in 1973 when they played the Lions in Detroit at Tiger Stadium and shut out the Lions 20-0. But all of the games against the Cowboys on Thanksgiving Day, the most memorable being the Clint Longley game in 1974 with the Cowboys winning 24-23, all of them had been disappointing losses. Some of them where they had chances. There was a game 20 years ago, Spurrier's first team in Washington played the Cowboys on Thanksgiving Day, and Danny Werfel threw 3 touchdown passes in the game, but also threw 3 interceptions. And the punter, and I can't remember his name now, had basically his nose, you know, ripped off of his face along with his face mask on a punt. But Washington lost that game 27-20. 2012 was glorious. To finally beat the Cowboys on Thanksgiving Day 10 years ago yesterday was an incredible, incredible memory and one of the nicest Thanksgivings of all time. Now, Washington's won since in Dallas on Thanksgiving Day. They blew out the Cowboys in 2020 with Alex Smith. 2018, they lost. Well, there are more losses after 2012. They lost to the Cowboys in 2016. And what was really as big a regular season game as Washington's had in really the last 10 years. Now, the 2012 season finale was a big game against the Cowboys. The 2016 game, I've mentioned this before, was a game between the Cowboys and the Redskins with the best aggregate record of both teams since the early 1990s. The Cowboys were 9-1, and Washington was 6-3-1 off of the Sunday night blowout of the Packers. And that 2016 game was a ball game. I mean, I think Cousins threw for 460 in the game. Jordan Reed was uncheckable. The problem was the Washington defense in 2016 was an absolute abomination. They gave up like 550 yards of offense. The kicker, Hopkins, missed a big kick in that game, and Washington lost. They played the Giants the next year, if you recall, on Thanksgiving, and won on a Thanksgiving night game on NBC, 20-10. It was kind of a boring game. And then 2018, they lost with Colt McCoy. And then 2020, with Alex Smith, they went into Dallas in Ron Rivera's first year and destroyed the Cowboys 41-16. So Washington, hadn't won at all in Dallas. They've now won twice over the last 10 years. But that game 10 years ago sparked an amazing 7-game winning streak to end the season. They would, after the Cowboys having a long layoff and being now back squarely in a playoff race at 5-6, they were 5-6 in that particular moment. They came home on a Monday night football game and beat the Giants 17-16. That was a huge a game for Griffin in the run game in particular. And then they had that very exciting overtime win over the Ravens. That was a game in which RG3 got hurt. He was put back in the game. Now we get into these infamous Washington games with Robert Griffin III. It started with Haloti Ngata's hit on Griffin in the Ravens game. Cousins comes in, throws a touchdown pass, scores on a 2-point conversion to tie the game on a quarterback on a QB draw, and then they get the big punt return in overtime to set up the winning field goal. And then they blew out Cleveland without Griffin. We know the story of that game. They came back and beat Philadelphia, which set up the season finale against the Cowboys for the division, which Alfred Morris ended up with an iconic game, rushing for 200 yards in a 28-18 win. 7 straight wins for Mike Shanahan and RG3's Washington Redskins really started in earnest with that Thanksgiving Day win in Dallas against the Cowboys 10 years ago yesterday. And it was my favorite all-time Thanksgiving Day game involving Washington, because most of them had been losses at that point. All of them had been losses to the Cowboys, and it really did seem like RG3, who was well on his way to winning the NFC rookie, the NFL's Rookie of the Year award, that they had finally found their quarterback. We know how the season ended. 14-0 lead against Seattle. They lost 24-14 with RG3 going down in a heap deep in his own territory on that horrible FedEx turf, blowing out his ACL and his LCL. And then it was all about all in for week one, and it was all downhill from there. Really, among those brief, fleeting moments, we haven't had a lot of them over the last quarter century. Forget quarter century. I mean, we, specifically identifying Dan as a major culprit, but really it started with Joe leaving after the 92-93 playoff games against Minnesota and San Francisco, and where Washington was with respect to the salary cap as the salary cap era got underway. They were old, they were expensive, and Joe saw it coming, and things kind of fell apart, and those Norv Turner years weren't great. And it's been, over the last 30 years, there have been a few major highlights in Thanksgiving Day 2012, 10 years ago, with Robert Griffin III and Santana Moss and Pierre Garçon and Alfred Morris leading the way, was one of those highlight moments. God, I love that game. So excited. And as I was thinking about it last night, I thought, this run that they're on right now, if it were to continue, I have to be completely honest with you, I just wish they were still the Redskins during this run right now. It seems different to me. With that said, they're playing some damn good football. And there was an indication that the desert, the boys in the desert, think Washington's a pretty damn good football team right now. And I'll share with you the reason for that when we come back. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980, theteam980.com. We're also free and live on the Odyssey app.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews, or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend, or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
So Washington on Sunday against Atlanta is a four-point favorite right now. There's some four-and-a-halves out there. They opened at, 2 weeks ago, they were going to be about a one-and-a-half, two-point favorite. It's now up to four-and-a-half. Vegas giving them some respect here. And, by the way, some sharp bettors lining up on Washington. But that's not the indication that I talked about in the last segment. There is an indication to me, a big-time indication of what the boys in the desert think about the Washington Commanders right now. And that indication is the look-ahead line to next week when they play at New York against the Giants in East Rutherford. This is a point spread a few weeks ago that would have been the Giants -3.5, -4, -5, somewhere in that general range. The Giants would have been a solid, 3 to 4 point favorite, really, at home against Washington. Now, Washington next week on the road against the Giants, they're favored. Washington is a 1, 1.5 point favorite, depending on where you look. That is mad respect, as the youngins might say, or might not say. I'm shocked by that. I did not think they would be a favorite against the Giants on the road. I did say that they will definitely be a favorite at home against the Giants in the game coming off the bye week. And as if and we started to talk about this a little bit, as you look at their remaining schedule, Washington's going to be favored in more games than we thought a few weeks ago. I think they'll be favored. They're favored against the Falcons. They were favored against the Texans. They're going to be favored in one of those two Giant games. Now it appears they're going to be favored in both Giant games. Just so you know, a one-point favorite on the road essentially means that they view Washington as 4 points better than the Giants, because you get three essentially for being the home team. So in a neutral field, Washington would be a four-point favorite. The boys and the odds makers, the boys in the desert, the odds makers think Washington right now is a better football team than the New York Giants. I agree. They won't be favored in San Francisco, in Santa Clara, against the 49ers. They will be favored against the Browns at home as it stands now. And the Cowboys game at the end of the year, we don't know what the Cowboys will have in terms of significance of the game. They may already have locked up the 5 seed. If the Eagles, now the Cowboys are not out of the division race. You know, at 7-3 with the Eagles at 10-1, they still play, and they play in Dallas on Christmas Eve. So the Cowboys still have a chance, to win the division. And let me mention with respect to the Dallas-Philadelphia race in the NFC East, the Eagles have a division loss that may end up being the difference maker between Dallas and Philadelphia, and that division loss is the Washington loss. What do I mean by that? Well, if Dallas somehow catches Philadelphia, they're two games back. They have a game against Philadelphia in Dallas on Christmas Eve. By the way, the Eagles still play the Titans. They still have to play the Giants on the road. It's not a brutal schedule. They've got the Giants twice. They do play the Packers coming up as well, but you know, I think we know what the Packers are right now. The Cowboys, meantime, have a pretty damn easy schedule. They also have to play the Titans. They play the Jags, the Texans, the Colts, and the Giants. The Cowboys, if they can come back and tie the Eagles with a win against the Eagles, the difference may be, because the next criteria, the next tie-breaking criteria, is division record. It may be the loss by the Eagles to Washington on Monday night that ends up handing the Cowboys the division. That would be if the Cowboys beat Washington in the season finale. Now, there is a chance that Philadelphia plays so well, keeps Dallas at bay, beats Dallas on Christmas Eve, and has the division wrapped up, and the Cowboys have the number 5 seed wrapped up before that season finale. You know, the 4 division winners, and then it's the next 3 best records. And looking at it now, the Cowboys would have a chance to have, you know, perhaps the best record of the wild card teams. And if they couldn't go any worse seeding-wise or any better seeding-wise, they may not play their starters in that season finale. That possibility exists. So Washington could be favored in that game as well. The fact that they are favored next week in New York against the Giants from where it was just a few weeks ago, the NFL, like we always talk about, I mean, it is week to week, and you cannot make judgments about teams early in the season, even though we did with Washington at 1-4. Even though we didn't follow our own advice, and at 1-4, we said they're basically dead. It was really, if they lost to Chicago in that Thursday night game, they could keep it alive by beating Chicago, which they did, barely. The look-ahead line, Washington -1 on the road against the Giants in what will be 2 significant NFC playoff-chasing games. Both of them. And Washington has that scheduling quirk, you know, where they're playing these 2 games back-to-back with a bye week in between. I mean, you rarely see that. I think Baltimore did it last year with Cleveland, I think it was. They had back-to-back games against the Browns with a bye week in between. Washington gets December 4th, the Giants, and then December 18th, the Giants, the second one being at home. The Giants do not play Washington back-to-back. They have in between Washington the Eagles. And the Giants, among the NFC East teams and even the NFC wildcard contenders, their schedule is pretty difficult. They play the Cowboys, the Eagles twice, Washington twice, and Minnesota on the road. And then the other game they have is Indianapolis at home. Which, you know, the Colts obviously look like a different football team under Jeff Saturday at this point through 2 games. You know, having beaten the Raiders and having Philadelphia on the ropes up 10 in the fourth quarter, even though they lost that game. But I thought that was really, I've been looking to see, they call those the look-ahead lines, where you get an early indication of the following week on what the point spread's going to be. Now, things this weekend can change that drastically. You know, if Washington got thumped at home by Atlanta and the Giants beat the Cowboys on Thanksgiving Day, and Washington lost, you know, 3 players, key players, to injury, that line would change. That line would change dramatically. But right now, all things being equal, The boys in the desert just flat out think Washington's a better team than the Giants. And this is why I said yesterday when we did the segment about, you know, what are you predicting as the final outcome of the regular season? I said 10 wins and the sixth seed, because I do think they've got a chance here. I think they're going to beat Atlanta Sunday. And I'll tell you, the public believes Washington's going to beat Atlanta as well. And that's concerning, but there's a lot of sharp money on Washington too. I don't think I'll have Atlanta in the smell test this week, which you're probably at this point saying, put them in the smell test. You've been wrong on Washington a lot this year. I have been, I guess, more often than not, been wrong about them this year. That's true. But the Falcons are a major anti-public play Sunday. We'll see. But I like Washington to beat Atlanta. And then given that they'll be favored in both Giant games, I mean, you literally have a chance right now. You know, you have a chance to get to 9-5 before that, you know, game that will be a tough game. You know, not unwinnable, but a tough game against the 49ers, and then finishing up with the Browns and the Cowboys. Yeah, I like them to win 10. I like them to win 10, and my prediction yesterday was not only will they win 10, they will end up being a 6th seed, not the 7th seed. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, because the 6th seed in the NFC could end up playing San Francisco in the first round on the road. Look at us. How did this happen? I don't know how it happened. Yes, I do. They have really good players on defense. And Cam Curl came back, and they changed their defensive line coach, and which was something that a lot of the players wanted for a while. And they got rid of William Jackson III. There are a lot of things that have come together, but nothing's come together for this team more than its defense, which is clearly right now. I don't care which statistical, you know, traditional or advanced you use. Use your eyes, watch this team on defense. Look at what they are doing against the opposing team's rush attack. And you know, with your own eyes as a football fan, this is a damn good defensive football team. Top 10, I think top 3 in the NFC. I'd have Dallas and San Francisco, their defenses ahead of them. I just think that they have a little bit more playmaking ability on defense. San Francisco's secondary isn't as good, and Philly has, you know, big time capability defensively, that's for sure. So does Tampa. But Washington's right there. And defense this year is carrying teams. It's a weird year. And in the NFC, running the football, stopping the run, winning the turnover battle, old tried and true, old school football is going to take you a long way this year. And I think Ron Rivera knows it. And I think Jack Del Rio knows it. And I think Scott Turner knows it. And I think all of their thought going into all of these games is, we can stop people, we can run the football and create good down and distance, and as long as we don't commit turnovers, and we're gonna have a chance to win every single one of these games. Sunday was the first ass-kicking of the year. There's another one or two ass-kickings to come. They're too good on defense right now not to have another double-digit win before this season is over. All right. I wanted to just mention real quickly two things before Denton and I take a swing with thoughts on the college football playoff. So last night I tuned in to the NBA pregame show on TNT with, you know, with Kenny, EJ, Shaq, and Barkley, because if you haven't been following this story, Ben Simmons made his return to Philadelphia last night. After being traded to Brooklyn, and Brooklyn was a big-time favorite because Philly had everybody out. Embiid was out, Harden was out. Who else was out, Denton, in that game?
Tyrese Maxey was out as well.
Maxey was out. And Barkley said in the pregame show, you know, having played in Philadelphia, he said, this is going to be a rough night for Ben Simmons. He said, there are three cities that are just absolutely, you know, relentless with its fan bases, Boston, New York, and Philadelphia. And he said the Philadelphia fans are going to be awful. And he said, I hope there's extra security. Turned out to be, I don't know, for me anyway, I watched the first quarter. I didn't watch the rest of the game. I watched the pregame and the first quarter. To be honest with you, I thought it would be a lot worse. Now, it was a 7:30 start on a holiday week. It was a sold-out crowd. The Philly fans got all over Ben Simmons for sure, but it wasn't as harsh as I thought it would be. What did you think, Denton?
I mean, I heard the boos. I always think it's funny when they're like still booing him every time he touches the ball in the third quarter, like they're really committed to it. I mean, I think we've seen worse in recent years. Like when LeBron went back to Cleveland, I felt like it was much worse than Simmons going back to Philly, and Cleveland's like a okay sports town at best.
You're right about that. That was something else that night. Here's what I wanted to say about this. First of all, I thought, you know, whatever. It's an NBA regular season game, and the Philadelphia fans got on him, and they screamed. I thought Simmons, at least in that first quarter, I thought he handled it really well, and I thought he played well. He ended up in the first quarter assisting on the first three baskets with exceptional passes. And I thought he looked, when I was watching him, and I have not really, you know, because Brooklyn's been a bad team this year. I know he had, you know, a big game recently when he went for like 22 and 10 or something like that. And Kenny Smith was talking about before the game that he's seen more of what Ben Simmons used to be. I think Ben Simmons, in so many ways, stole money. I really do. From the Philadelphia 76ers. The mental issue, the health issues, the anxiety, the block over that seventh game where he didn't take the shot, the mental block just over shooting in general, you know, whether or not he was legitimately injured or not, the teasing of maybe he'll come back, he won't, and he didn't. The relationship with Doc Rivers, etc. I didn't like the way that unfolded for him. But, you know, with young people, for me, it's always been I'd like to see them kind of rebound and get it together and figure it out. I'm much more, even though we're in a very critical environment, personally, especially with young people, and I've been a coach, you know, for 30 years, basketball coach on and off for 30 years, I'm much more encouraging with young people. And I wanted Ben Simmons to play well last night. And I thought he did, and I thought he handled at least the part I watched with great poise. This is a guy that went through a lot. I think that there should have been more contrition on his part. I think that there was a real disconnect with him last year and some of the ways he handled it. But I think he also was dealing with major mental health anxiety. You know, there were a lot of issues there, but I was rooting for him last night. He ended up with 11 points, 11 assists, 7 rebounds, 3 block shots, and 3 steals. That's a pretty damn good Ben Simmons performance. But Brooklyn lost to Philadelphia. They lost the game to Philadelphia without Philadelphia having Embiid, Maxey, and Harden. That's crazy. 115-106. The Nets are a mess right now. I did see the story yesterday that they're shopping Kyrie Irving, and I had a lot of Wizards fans send me that blurb and say, "Would you?" I mean, I would love, from a basketball standpoint, to have the Kyrie Irving that is more and totally focused on basketball and winning. Of course, that would be incredible. But no, I don't want that guy. He is, I don't think, very bright. I think he's a total faux intellectual, and I think he's an incredible disruptive force, and I think you're seeing that in Brooklyn right now. Speaking of Brooklyn, just as a quick aside, Kevin Durant had a comment yesterday. I don't know if you saw this, if anybody saw this yesterday. Where is it? Here it is. Kevin Durant was talking on a podcast, I think it was, called Boardroom.
Yeah, this is that's his company. So that's his podcast.
That's his podcast? Yeah. Okay, it's his own podcast. Did you see what he said about Kevin Huerter?
I did.
Kevin Huerter, for those of you who don't know, Kevin Huerter was a good player at Maryland. Went, you know, after his sophomore year when people were like, huh? And then he ended up getting drafted in the first round by the Hawks and has had some really good years in Atlanta, playing alongside Trae Young, playing some meaningful playoff games for the Hawks the last couple of years. Kevin Huerter's off to an incredible start after getting traded to Sacramento. He's playing out in Sacramento with the Kings. Right now, Kevin Huerter is averaging 16.7 points per game. But Kevin Huerter is absolutely killing it from long range. Right now, Kevin Huerter for the season is shooting 50% from behind the arc. 50% from behind the arc. He's averaging 11.2 attempts per game, and he's making 5.6 attempts per game. You can do that math. That comes out to a 50%. I'm sorry, that's the 2 point. The 3 point numbers: 3.7 made on 7.4 attempted, 50% from the 3 point line. To which Kevin Durant said the following on his podcast, quote, "Kevin Huerter right now, he's playing like Clay," as in Clay Thompson, "Steph," as in Steph Curry. "If you're not a basketball fan and locked in on the league, you got to watch how Kevin Huerter is shooting the ball right now." He has always been a great shooter. And he's, you know, not only got the size, but he's got the perfect stroke and a super quick release on top of that. Kevin Huerter is absolutely tearing it up right now in Sacramento for a team, by the way, who is 10-6, surprisingly 10-6. They've got the kid from Iowa that I liked, Keegan Murray, on the team. They've got Sabonis on the team. They've got, you know, I have no idea how old Harrison Barnes is at this point. He's on the team. They've got De'Aaron Fox on the team. Is Malik Monk on that team?
Yeah, I believe Malik Monk is playing with the Kings this year.
And then they've got the kid from Baylor that I like, Davion Mitchell, who was an absolute beast in that national championship game against Gonzaga 2 years ago. Huerter, they beat Memphis last night. Now, they beat Memphis last night, you know, on the road, and Ja Morant was playing. And Huerter in the game last night, 18 points, 6 of 10 from the field, 4 for 7 from behind the arc. So he was greater than 50% last night. I'm just looking to see. He's got to be absolutely, you know, killing it in terms of leading the league in field goal and 3-point percentage, right?
I can't imagine anybody's shooting better than 50% now.
Is it 50%
like 16 games is a long stretch to do so? It's not like, okay, I'm lying. I think Steph's around there, but that's a long stretch to shoot 50% from 3-point.
There are other 3-point shooters ahead of him, but they don't have anywhere near the number of attempts. I mean, he doubles up the next. Actually, interestingly, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope in Denver right now is shooting 50.7% from behind the arc. He's averaging 4.7 3-point attempts per game. So a little bit more than half of what Huerter is attempting at 7.4. Per game. But in terms of three-pointers made right now on the season, overall three-pointers made on – oh, this is an average. Okay. Yes, yeah, Steph Curry still has the highest average right now. Huerter's having a great season, and that's quite the compliment from Kevin Durant, who I know pays attention to anybody that comes out of the local D.C. scene. Not that Huerter's from here, but Huerter played at Maryland. And Durant follows everything DC sports related. I mean, comparing him to Clay and Steph, wow. That is quite the compliment. All right, let's get to some college football playoff rankings talks, discussion, right after these words from a few of our sponsors. Michael Phillips will join us at 7.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medella is your reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
And when we go to a 12-team playoff field in college football, there will be all of these arguments, but it'll be about, you know, spots, you know, basically 10 through 14, and which of those four teams is going to make, you know, which of those four teams is going to make it. I don't know. I like this right now. I love the conversation of it on this show. I've enjoyed it for the last couple of years, but this year really does offer up a number of possibilities. So last night, the rankings didn't change. Georgia 1, Ohio State 2, Michigan 3, TCU 4. LSU remained ahead of USC, and Alabama came in at 7, a spot ahead of Clemson. First reactions for me, Denton, the very first reaction I had was, well, this solidifies what I've thought all along, even with Tennessee. Because, I mean, it makes it easier with Tennessee out, much easier. But LSU runs the table they're in, period. I mean, that's a given now. They'll be the first two-loss team to make it in this four-team playoff format. If they beat A&M on Saturday or Friday, whenever they play that game, and then they beat Georgia as like a 15 or 16-point underdog, they will be in. And by the way, just let me just say right now, I think right now, as we're talking about teams, LSU is the second best team in the country behind Georgia. But I think Georgia is number one by far. Now, it doesn't mean that I think LSU should be in after they if they lose to Georgia, which I expect to happen. I'm just telling you that based on the eye test, I think LSU is the second best team in the country right now behind Georgia. But what happened with, you know, last night with Tennessee, you know, dropping after their blowout loss to South Carolina, is that LSU guaranteed itself a spot in the playoff if they run the table. Because, you know, the Ohio State-Michigan one-loss winner is not going to get in now over an LSU-SEC championship team. Not with them sitting there at 5 with the biggest win of the season on their racket in the SEC championship. Like I said to you, Denton, a few weeks ago, on the night of December 4th or whenever that is, if LSU's just beaten Georgia, there isn't a college football voter, fan, or anybody on that committee that isn't going to be able to say with a straight face that LSU isn't one of the four best teams in the country. In fact, what we would be saying is that's the best team in the country right there. So that's number one. LSU's in definitively now if they win out. Number two is this for me. Alabama at 7 ahead of Clemson, I think to me, and they did not talk about it, and Rhys Davis shut it down on the show last night. If there's major chaos, and let me lay it out for you, Georgia runs the table, knocks out LSU. Ohio State blows the doors off Michigan Saturday. TCU loses to Iowa State. the worst team in the Big 12. USC gets beat by Notre Dame. Then Alabama, as a two-loss team, not playing in a championship game, with their two losses by a combined 4 points, a three-point loss in Knoxville and a one-point loss in Death Valley on the road in overtime. I think Alabama is very much in the conversation if chaos happens. They didn't even want to address it last night. I think at some point, Joey Galloway may have just mentioned it briefly. Like, if there's total chaos, two-loss Alabama. But Alabama, to me right now, would be, okay, playing this game, they'd be favored over Michigan, TCU, USC, and a double-digit favorite over Clemson. What were your big takeaways from last night?
Well, I had one, but first, like, do you feel like the group on the mothership is almost overcorrecting a little bit, trying to avoid the SEC bias? Because, like, last week and weeks prior, we were having the conversation, if LSU runs the table, they're in, and it felt like they were shutting it down. Now that Alabama is ahead of Clemson with two losses, it feels like they're shutting down the possibility of Alabama getting in. Like, am I, like, grasping at straws here? Does it feel like they're kind of trying
to,
like, overcorrect?
I mean, it's reasonable to think, you know, putting the SEC thing to the side, that Alabama's got no chance. I'm not saying that it's ridiculous to say that Bama is a two-loss team that can't play in a national can't play in a conference championship game. And by the way, is playing a 5-6 or a 6-5 Auburn team in the Iron Bowl. You know, is out of it. But I don't think so if what I just described happens.
Right,
but no, I don't necessarily agree with you that they're going overboard to not seem SEC biased, if that's what you're saying.
Yeah, it was just something that I'd kind of noticed. My biggest takeaway, and this week or this time last week, I wouldn't have thought this at all. I think if Ohio State loses, they still get in. Like, it feels like because Tennessee lost, there is very much an openness to say that the loser of the Michigan-Ohio State game, which last week we thought, I think both of us, they're done unless chaos happens. Well, Tennessee losing and the potential of USC or TCU dropping a game, that opens up the door for, if Ohio State in particular, if they lose to Michigan in a close one, I still think they get in with one loss.
Yeah, but TCU and LSU have to lose. One of those right. Two teams has to lose. I agree with you, but man, would that be an argument? Depending on the loss, you know, context of Saturday's game in Columbus, you know, the score, the way the game plays out, is going to be a big deal for Ohio State and maybe even Michigan, but more so for Ohio State because of their non-con schedule, which was tougher than Michigan's. So, I mean, if Ohio State loses a close game to Michigan and TCU drops a game and LSU drops a game, but SC runs the table, then it's going to be, I'm sorry, TCU wins, so it's Georgia, Michigan, TCU, but LSU loses. It's going to be one hell of a conversation between a one-loss Ohio State, a one-loss USC, and yes, a one-loss Clemson at that point. Now, I'm with you. I think Ohio State would be the best team, but USC would be a conference champion, and so would Clemson in that scenario.
And I would want USC to get in that scenario with the conference championship, but if they lose and it's between Ohio State and Clemson, I'd rather see Ohio State.
By the way, here's another big takeaway from last night. The committee thinks what we think, and that is Clemson's just not very good. You know, they're at 8. They're behind Alabama. They're well behind SC. They're a one-loss team. They got blown out by Notre Dame. The funny thing, and I heard Heather Dinich say this as part of the show last night. She was excellent. She said Notre Dame's such a factor in all of this, right? Because Ohio State owns a win over Notre Dame. USC plays Notre Dame this Saturday. Clemson got blown out by Notre Dame. You know, Notre Dame's results with three teams are going to play a big, big role potentially. But here's what I think will happen. Georgia wins out. I think Michigan has a chance Saturday. I really do. But I'll just say Ohio State wins. And I think TCU is going to lose a game. I just do. I don't want them to lose a game, but I think they're going to lose a game. And I think TCU and LSU will both be out because LSU will lose to Georgia. I think USC is going to lose a game as well. And I think you're going to end up with Georgia, Ohio State as locks. And then it's going to be a conversation about a bunch of one-loss teams for two spots. Okay, it'll be Michigan as a one-loss team, TCU as a one-loss team, and Clemson as a one-loss team. That two of those three will end up making it, and I'm not really sure which two it should be. I think in that particular scenario, TCU actually has a chance as a one-loss team because of their schedule strength.
Would that one-loss TCU be to Iowa State or in the conference championship?
It's really interesting, right? Because if it's to Iowa State, it's a terrible loss, but then they beat K-State and they're a conference champion.
Right.
But if they beat Iowa State, it's not a bad loss to lose to K-State. K-State's, you know, right now, where are they? Aren't they 15. Like 11th?
Yeah, they're definitely top 15.
12th, something like that? 12th, I think. Yeah, they're 12th. All right, let's get to Michael Phillips next. Kevin Sheehan Show, Team 980, theteam980.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.